You're listening to the John Carlos Sherry Alica Show. Following us along there, you can look at us right over there, the Instagram page, John and Sherry Show. Sherry spelled S-H-A-R-I. And, of course, all are welcome. Teeny Tiny back again for another fabulous day. Let's get Sherry in here. Give me my clicker back there, Andrew. I can't press the button because you got my put the thing on there. You can't. Gee whiz. Hang on, Sherry. Hang on. There we go. I cut the part out about your third nipple.
Oh, sure.
There you go. After listening back to the lyrics, it does paint you as a rather unattractive human being. So I thought I'd just cut that part out.
I don't think the third nipple is really the problem.
Is it the big hands?
Well, I think that's worse than a third nipple. At least that's covered, and it's gone. But the hands remain.
Can't do anything about them. Just wear men's gloves. All right, big gardening gloves. Hey, we've got a lot of news to get to. Let's see. Well, the Seattle City Council says they've laid the groundwork for plans to have the fire department come in and just smash and knock down a bunch of old broken down buildings. They'd set this thing up, I think, in 2023, maybe it was last year. They said, listen, if you got a building and there's graffiti on it, you got to get that off. We're going to fine you. If weeds start to grow near your building, we're going to fine you. If there's garbage out front, we're going to fine you. We're going to do all this sort of stuff because it's a blight. Your buildings look like crap. So take care of them or we're going to fine you. I guess a lot of these guys just figure, forget it. They just leave the buildings, just forget about them, let them go. And a lot of people say the fire department said, well, you know, we've had to put out 130 some fires or something because of these buildings are there. And I don't know how the buildings get caught on fire, but, well, they're going to knock them down.
It's just a disgrace for this beautiful neighborhood that I live in.
Broken windows, a scarred exterior, building that stands out like a metaphorical sore thumb.
But it was a big fire.
Do you think that building is a public safety risk?
No, certainly.
The complex on Terry is one of almost four dozen buildings on a city watch list of sorts.
We have been managing this challenge for quite a while.
Fire Chief Harold Scoggins made his formal plea to amend the city code to force compliance on derelict building owners and for them to pick up the tab of demolition.
How do you possibly enforce this? How do you financially enforce this on a property owner who doesn't want to tear down their building?
If we get to the end of the road and we have that property that is creating imminent life safety hazards to the community, we'll have the ability to solve that problem.
This is not a cheap proposition.
This is not a cheap proposition. It's a very important proposition, though.
Scoggins says his department is responding to fires at derelict buildings in record numbers. The flames only growing from totals in 2021 and on pace to reach the same heights as last year's numbers. Three people died in vacant Seattle building fires in 2023, and the response has stretched city resources. The mayor and certain council members believe the emergency authorization is now needed, even if it may create budget complications.
It creates a problem for neighbors. It creates frustration with neighboring businesses. So I think this is... It is a necessary tool.
The idea is not new. Detroit has demolished thousands of buildings at a multi-million dollar taxpayer expense over similar concerns.
Obviously, I want them to take care of this one first because I walk here four or five times a week. But I think it's a bigger problem than this.
The question now is whether this tall order can be remedied by any quick fix. Scoggins told me today his department is ready to act the day the legislation is approved. As of right now, a Seattle committee is expected to vote on this May 14th, with the full council expected to vote the week after that. But that is the story for now. Live in Seattle, I'm Chris Daniels, Como News.
Appreciate the work Chris Daniels does over there at Como, but it is an interesting question. What if the landlord that has the building, now they say it's derelict, where the landlord says, no, I don't, I've got this, this is my property. Then the city comes along and says, oh, no, they could claim it for eminent domain. We're going to take it from you, which they do. But if the person says, no, this is mine, I'll take care of it. I'll reinforce the doors. That's what you want me to do. Put a fence up. I'll do that. But that's my property. You can't knock it down. But you see how quickly they sort of skip right over that. get into a battle with the city, forget it, because they've got unlimited supply, your money, to fight them with their lawyers against the lawyers of the people that have the building. Detroit, I think, has 40,000 buildings they need to knock down. Most of them have been gone for a long time. They're just going to wipe out entire neighborhoods. But if somebody has a building, the city says, well, it's a derelict building, then you get into the argument, we'll define it. Well, the city can define all sorts of rules and regulations to basically then make that building considered to be derelict and then have it knocked down. So that'll be a battle, but you can never fight City Hall. Yes, I'm sorry. Question in the back, that man wrapped up in rags. Yes, sir.
Don't you think that, I mean, the ones like the old Vito's building on Madison and 9th Avenue.
Oh, right. So, all the fires they've had there. Yeah.
Right. So it was just some guy, you know, some guy burned down his apartment and the building got ruined and then, you know, flooded Vito's. So it became vacant. And then people started moving in there and setting fires to keep warm and stuff like that. And then I think it was three fires later, it actually damaged a neighboring building. So at the point when you have people squatting in there, you know, doing whatever they can to keep warm, that's like, I think everybody would agree that that constitutes as a derelict building. And if the owner is not doing anything to prevent that, then maybe it does make sense for the city to step in.
Yeah, if it's a hazard, if it's a safety hazard for the other buildings next door. But don't forget, you know, we don't enforce squatting laws.
Right.
And there's plenty of places if people want to get warm. There are warming centers. There are shelters they can go to. But if you'd like to live in somebody else's building and set the place on fire, apparently you can still do that. Now, I'm just saying, you get into a battle. If somebody owns the building, they have the building, and they said it's not derelict, I plan on doing something with it. I'm just getting funding or something. Then the city will say, oh, well, we're going to get rid of that one. You know, but they got to get the budget for it. They burn these things down, and the fire department can't wait to go in there and knock them down and do whatever else they need to do. It's not cheap to take them all down, too, right? Because then you have an empty lot. Then who owns the lot? I assume the landlord still has a lot. The tenant still has the lot, still has the property, but the building comes down. It'll be interesting to see if they get this thing going. Yeah.
Seems to me if they still own the land, then they have to sell the land to somebody to reestablish something new there. But they should have the right to maintain the land and whatever that's worth.
I was surprised my 4 years of the city council how quick some of those city council members were to declare eminent domain. Because we had to go in an executive session for that. That's outside the public. We'd sit in there and say, well, what would it cost us to take the land from the guy? I said, whoa. This guy's property. Yeah, I know, but we could go get it if we wanted it. I said, you can through eminent domain, but like that's just going in and saying, oh, no, we have a better purpose for your land than you do, so we're going to go get your land from you. We're going to take it. We'll offer you, they do assess the value of the thing. They can't go over 10% over the estimated cost of it, but then the city comes in and basically just says, okay, we're taking it. It just felt so wrong. And then they'd question me, well, will they fight us on this? The lawyer would say, yeah. Well, what do you think it'll cost us? I don't know, $150,000 maybe. Well, let's see about getting the bill. Let's see if we just take the land. So I don't know what's going to happen with Seattle and how many of these the people that own the property, whether they're going to start to fight city on some of these. So they'll just make it really hard, just keep fining them over and over again until finally like, okay, forget it, I'm getting out of here. It'll be interesting to see how fast the firemen there. As a guy who filled out the first page of the 3-page application to become a firefighter. What does that sound, Cheryl?
It was actually a text from
Thomas
Joe.
Oh, it's a secret silent text from Joe.
Hey,
you know what? When we're doing, hey, Joe.
I didn't do it.
Three of us. These little secret side things you guys do. I don't know what that's about.
It was an email.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's
fair. Yeah, he sent a secret email.
Guilty of the email.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because after I watched the firefighters, they weren't really fighting. They were more like fire lollygagging around my burning cabin. I was like, I don't know if I want to be a member of that club right now. So I'm going to sort of put a hold on being a firefighter, Sherry, so I haven't filled out the last two pages.
I seem to recall that you had a little bit cooled off your idea about the firefighter even before the fire.
Well, if I had seen those guys really pick up the pace, I did yell out because I don't watch a lot of pop culture, but I did say to the one guy, I saw Kurt Russell run in. You guys might want to run in. He's yelling out like backdraft references to the late 80s. You guys looking at me like, huh? I was like, come on, just double time.
That's my brother.
Get some water on that thing. Get some foam in there. And then when he threw the one guy, I'm assuming he's not listening. So there's the little cabin. They go in after it's burned for a while. And then there's a piece of the ceiling, a little piece of wood, about 7 feet, piece of thing that was in the ceiling. Rather than opening the window and chucking it out, there's no need to throw it out anyway, just right through the glass.
Oh.
Okay.
Could have recycled that.
Check.
Maybe they felt that the building.
You didn't have to Yelp them, huh?
Was the building was so damaged that they couldn't go into it. It wasn't safe to go in.
No. They walked in there. They're in there looking around at my stuff.
Thumbing through your books.
My massive porn collection.
Okay. I'd be mad kidding. Too.
I'm kidding. Oh, yeah. Yeah, not all fire. Just was surprised at the lack of enthusiasm to put out the fire at my place. That's all. Should have videotaped it, and I should have Yelped those guys. All right. Well, let's go Rance. Rance has got a piece out there about Governor Jay Inslee slams Bob Ferguson is brain dead. I don't think that's exact. Well, here's what happened. So Inslee goes to celebrate Earth Day and all of his failed accomplishments, and he happens to talk something. It gets in there about the electrification of the ferry system, because I think the Seattle Times had said, come on, let's get a couple of these diesel guys, look at diesel ferries. Let's get this stuff going because we're way, way behind. Rather than waiting for the electrification of the ferry, it's going to take more time. Let's get these things. It's a real mess over there. So Inslee was sort of pushing back on that the piece that was in the Seattle Times, and said that anybody that thinks that you should have a diesel-powered ferry, you know, we're only going back. They always talk about going back. And therefore, you know, you'd be brain dead if you're sort of pushing for that. And Ferguson had mentioned at some point, I don't know, a month ago or whatever, saying that, you know, we should probably get some diesel-powered ferries to get in there and to provide service for the people, because it keeps getting worse and worse every single year. So I guess that's basically it. And Rance gets an opportunity to go, oh, look at this. Inslee's calling Ferguson brain dead, right? There's nothing else to that one. That's that whole story, that little bit of bickering back and forth. Inslee feels anybody who doesn't believe in electrification of vehicles is brain dead. So here's my question to the governor. Are you okay with 40,000 six-year-olds there in the Congo working in the cobalt mines?
I mean, it's a good question. A great question.
Thank you. Right? And the damage done to the environment to mine for EV, to mine for the batteries, which is really bizarre, because you look at, oh, we're going EV, everybody's all going EV, but they never really look at, like, what's happening in order to get all of those materials. So to get one battery, EV battery, Sherry, 20,000 pounds of lithium brine, 60,000 pounds of cobalt, 10,000 pounds of nickel, 12,000 pounds of copper, as you try to extract the minerals needed and the damage done to the environment. I was reading about these guys that work in these things. They've got early set of cerebral palsy. They have all sorts of conditions in their internal organs from all of the dust and stuff that's coming up from lithium and cobalt and nickel, and just the damage done to the environment to mine all of this sort of stuff. It's really weird, because they keep talking about, oh, EV is going to save the planet, you know, whatever the degrees are. But what about this damage done to the environment? That's not as important as we race towards this climate, culture, religion that they have, all for EV. Why not hydrogen?
It's all part of the hypocrisy of it.
Oh, wow. Ooh, hot take there. Without a third nipple, you're still a bit of a wildcat, Sherry.
I mean, let's face it. They want to look at what they want to look at and sell what they can. And any argument against it, they have to shut down, even though it's the same kind of thing as all of the climate defenders show up at the climate conferences in private jets and limousines and SUVs that are running outside the entire time while they're in the conference. They're not looking at that. But they have to tell the rest of us what to do.
Right, because the money's in the EV. Let's all go EV. It was hydrogen was being researched as a possible alternative to EV. So you had gas, hydrogen, and electric, and then the Obama administration went in and cut it by about 45%, and then more was cut, and then the Trump administration cut more of it. But as far as hydrogen to EV, hydrogen is doesn't cost as much in order to produce. It's better long term, travels further, and overall would be better for the environment rather than having to mine all this sort of stuff. Hydrogen, as you know, Sherry, is the most plentiful of all of that's in the periodic table and is one of the most plentiful resources that we have. As you know that, hydrogen.
Yes, I did. Yes, because I memorized the periodic table many times.
You'd only have to memorize it once, Sherry.
What is the atomic weight
of
hydrogen?
The atomic weight of hydrogen. Are you talking about?
This?
But are you talking about in pounds or what?
Atomic mass weight, units, please.
Yeah, mass units, Sherry. You know this. This is going to be on the test on Friday. It's the periodic table.
I'm going to say it's like 1.00784 units.
74. That is correct.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Those big hands of yours Googling like a maniac. All right. Let's go over to Nate as everybody's driving around in their gas-powered cars destroying the environment.
Should have been a giveaway when I asked if it was in pounds.
I know. I didn't ignore that. Here we go with the John Curley, Sherry Ellicker Show. You're writing to us. It's good and good for you. Come on in to the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line. 1-888-973-5476. Teeny tiny right over there. Come on, don't look. She's looking sad because she can't win Employee of the Week. 9 times in a row is fine. So it's all right.
I do not get it.
All right, never mind. Here comes Todd Myers. Because, hang on. It's Todd. It's Todd. That's right. I saw this story this morning at 5:30. I thought, I wonder if Todd will be up. Washington to launch EV rebate program. Here's what you could save. So they could take $50 million out of your pocket. It's in the general fund. And they're going to say, hey, if you're a single person, you make under $45,180 a year, wouldn't it be great if you could have an EV car? Now you can't afford it. So what we're going to do for you is we're going to take money from the taxpayers and we're going to subsidize you for you can buy an EV car. So when I sent that over to Todd at like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, bing, right away, he writes back with that Todd Myers math from the Washington Policy Center that we all love. How did you do the math in order to find out that this is a ridiculous program? My words, not yours, Todd.
Let me first say it is the emblematic of the exciting life of a policy wonk that at 6 a.m. I'm having discussions about government subsidies.
Yes. Yes. Listen, no one ever thought you were exciting, so don't worry about having to pull back the big curtain on that. So when you did because the math you did was so simple as you sort of laid it out. What did you add, subtract, and divide to see that this is just more waste of money?
So again, I try to always use the government's own data, because a lot of studies you'll see is people play games and say, well, I did my own massaging of the data. So I use the state's numbers, which is $45 million for the program, and they say they will reduce it by they will reduce CO2 emissions by 24,000 metric tons, which is about almost $2,000 a metric ton. That means nothing to anybody except people like me, but I will just give you this comparison. Okay. It costs about $10 a metric ton. I can go right now and pay $10 a metric ton and support a project that reduces CO2. So the state's own program spends about 200 times as much as a program as I could get. And so the easiest way I can think to you know, sort of convey what that means. It's like paying more than $1,100 for a grande latte.
And the grande is not the venti either. That's not even the big one. That's the middle one. That's your middle one right there for $1,100.
You may or may not get sprinkles, yes.
Yeah, but you see so many holes in this program. Oh, we want it, it's also equity. They do the equity thing. It's not fair that just rich people should drive $90,000 cars. How about poor people? They should be able to drive $90,000 cars too, like EV cars, right? Get them out of their other old clunkers and put them in an EV. They think that the money will be there until it runs out. Do you think anybody is going to actually take them up on this?
Oh, absolutely. People will take them. I mean, it's enormous amount of money. And especially for the lease, because it's $9,000 to cover a 3-year lease. And so people will be able to figure out a way to take advantage of it. But good policy means, you know, what do we get for the investment? And what we get for the investment is tiny. So, like, if you want to help people who are poor, great. I'm all for that. We need a social safety net. But if you say to people, look, I'm going to give you $9,000 to make your life better, and they say, great, thank you. No. You can only do that if you buy a Tesla. That's what we want you to do. We'll only give you the $9,000. It's like, I don't need a Tesla. I have a car. Nope, sorry. You have to buy a Tesla. Well, that's not really helping them, is it? This doesn't work on any level. It doesn't work as a program to help people who are in need. It doesn't work as an environmental program. It works in one way, as a press conference that you can say, look how much I care about the environment. I'm spending $45 million of the taxpayers' money on electric vehicles. It is really a bad policy.
Todd, I have a question. If it just doesn't seem to talk about math, it doesn't seem to make sense at all. This is given to people that make about $45,000 a year. How can someone, even if they get, I know the lease thing is a great deal, but it's just $5,000 off a new EV and $2,500 off of a used EV. Now, if you're making $45,000 a year, how can you afford that even with the discount?
You probably can't. Now, for a family of four, because it's based on federal poverty level, for a family of four, it's about $95,000, which if you live in King County, it's not nothing, but still not a huge amount. So, yes, it's going to require people to stretch, which is why I say that it's not as generous as it seems, because you're telling people, as you say, either a couple making $45,000 or a family making $90,000-something, look, we'll give this to you if you buy a really expensive car. So I just think it fails on so many levels.
It's actually the total amount. So the state is kicking in $7,500 plus the federal. It could be as much as $15,000 off the price of the car for people. They say the lease is not a good move for a lot of people because they're going to get whacked when it comes to they go over the certain amount of miles anywhere between. They give you like 10,000 to 12,000 miles a year. If you're using the car more, people that tend to make less money tend to drive more miles because they're living further away from work, and they might work 6 days a week and they might be driving the car more. So it's going to come back to bite them later on when they're going to turn the car in and have to pay 25 cents for every mile over the agreed amount. So taking the lease part out of it, the $15,000 that they would get to buy a car. Now, the car has to be under $90,000. I mean, this is such a joke. And the fact that you stand up there and say it, and no one in the press says it, and the Seattle Times doesn't even get anybody they don't even call you on this to go, does this make any sense to anyone? So you get $15,000 off on the car. By the way, the cost of insuring an EV could be anywhere between 15 and 25% higher than an average car. So you got that additional cost of like $260 a month included on that. They're not going to help you with that. But it's just to get you out of your car for equity. They want to make sure that even poor people can afford, or even poor people can drive a car that they can't afford. And where are they going to plug the thing in? If you're making $45,000 a year, where's the electricity? You parked where? Out in some lot somewhere? Where's the electricity come from for you to charge it overnight? the whole thing is it's like if somebody had no idea how other people lived and came up with this program because they've got the $50 million or whatever you said is $48 million they want to spend on this program. This is just, it's just, they're blind by this religion.
Well,
that's
and,
my take
and what's
anyway.
What's frustrating is that we hear all the time that it's a climate crisis, that it's an
yes.
existential crisis. Well,
yes,
if something is an existential crisis, you better make sure that what you do works. If there was an asteroid coming toward the planet, we would make sure that the rockets going to hit it actually hit it. And when they missed it, we wouldn't just shrug and go, oh, well.
Yep.
But
yeah.
that's what we do with climate policy all the time, is that these policies constantly waste money. They don't yield good results. And then we shrug and go, oh, well, and next Earth Day we announce, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars more for new programs that don't do anything. It's very frustrating, and I think it is emblematic of the fact that environmental policy and climate policy is more about identity politics and image than it is the planet.
There you go. Hey, well said. All right, TM, get back to your exciting life there, would you?
Yeah, I got lots of other people to text me at 5 a.m.
Go Mariners! Go Mariners! Come on, Todd! Yeah, come on! What? They're going to be in first place! Come
Absolutely.
On.
We got the best right, staff in baseball.
There we go. That's something positive coming out of you. All right. Thank you, Todd. Let's go over to Todd from Myers & Washington Policy Center. Check him out all the time. In an ongoing effort to continue to remain sexy, Sherry.
Mm-hmm. It's a good effort.
Somebody decided to take a picture of Mark Zuckerberg and put a beard on it. And then everyone is like, oh, Zuck is back. The Zuck is... Zuck, look at him now with a beard. He's sexy. And people are saying, oh, no, the beard thing, the lumberjack look is going away. You got to get rid of that. Beards are not as sexy as they used to be. But still, people now, the ongoing discussion as to whether or not our why are beards sexy for, well, as a woman, why don't you explain why you just can't keep your eyes off me, Sherry?
Well, Mark Zuckerberg, they say, went from dud to stud when they added some facial hair. And I have to admit, he looks so much better with a little facial hair because he's got a big face. So
yes,
to
does.
Break it up a little bit with that, it really, really made a difference. Back in 2016, and remember that era, they took a poll, and they said that a little bit of stubble or light to heavy stubble was perceived as more attractive. But that was back when people were doing that, you know, when they had like kind of a beard, but not
yes.
really. Okay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
The reasons are because it's a sign of dominance. It's a sign of masculinity and it's a sign of maturity. So Mark Zuckerberg looks very young. He still looks kind of like a teenager. When you add that beard though, suddenly he becomes more sophisticated. He becomes more masculine. And so it is the most obvious sign of dominance. And that's what, I guess, unconsciously or something, women are attracted to.
That's right. I'd seen a study a couple of years ago that women like bearded men better than non-bearded men. And I actually witnessed it in my own home at the barn when the guy came to rent the place for his daughter's wedding. And Nick got all... like weak in the knees and all googly and he's laughing at every silly thing the guy was saying. He's like, wow, there's a lot of square footage in here.
Maybe he was really funny. But you're
gonna
say
square
no
footage in here. I don't get the humor. A lot of square footage, that's funny. How do you heat this? Is it electric or propane? Oh, it's propane.
I'm sure you're exaggerating ever so slightly, but look what you did. If it really didn't bother you, if it didn't bother you and you just thought it was dumb, you wouldn't have done what you did, which is
grow a beard.
Right?
And I admitted that I was doing it just for that reason. Because if I, this is it, you get to, you know, I've known Nick for 10 years. It's like, look, a lot of times you sort of give up in a relationship. Like, you know, if your wife thinks that's attractive, then do that. If you have to wear a silly hat or, you know, wear, you know, fishing waders all the time because you think that, then wear that. Like, if she thinks you're sexy, that's a cue. She's telling you. And if you put a shirt on, she's like, ugh, I hate that shirt. And then it suddenly disappears. Where it goes, who knows? Just let it go. Right? Just let it go.
Well, she didn't necessarily say you would be sexier with a beard. She just liked that guy with the beard.
I was going to just make sure.
You're definitely sexier with the beard.
Thank you, Joe.
Welcome.
But I don't know why that's some comforting coming for you, but thank you.
Glad Joe's noticing.
Go ahead, Sherry.
No, you look great no matter what.
Obviously, you can't even form words. You're so, you know, you're a woman. You've got desires and urges. It's okay.
I like you with a beard, but I personally like clean-shaven men.
Okay.
I think they look sexier that way.
All right, folks. We'll but compromise. I do like. I'll shave half it off for the next segment.
Or just do the C. Everett Koop thing where you just shave off the mustache and then you have, like, the lamb chop.
Side the Abraham come Lincoln, down. Dude, yeah, the Lincoln, right. Yeah, the Amish guy. Yeah, we all go all Amish, right? Remember, for a while there, Andrew was doing the mutton chops. I don't know what.
Yeah, that's right.
That was not by choice. I couldn't grow a mustache. That's why I had a mutton chop for so long.
It was
so you were
wild.
Hoping that it would connect or something?
Well, my mustache has grown in now, but back then it hadn't. It was the last thing to show up.
Oh, yeah, it was hard to be your friend. It was really touch and go there for a while. I couldn't even look at you.